I'm so sorry. I know this sucks. I'll be right back.
This is the Extra Hawk Rate Podcast, episode 422 for the week of August 29th, 2022. I am weightless, extra-large Dunkin' Donuts coffee cup, David T. Cole, and I'm here with triggered foodie, Sarah D. Bunting.
This baklava is to die for.
Co-payer, Tara Ariano.
I think I found a way around it.
And bribe-offering restaurateur, Patrick Monahan.
I know there's some way we can work this out.
Welcome to Extra Hot Great for another week. Joining us for the first time, he is the co-host of the podcast, What a Time to Be Alive and Not You, Guillermo, is Patrick Monahan.
Woo!
Welcome, Eddie!
Patrick!
We are so thrilled to have you to talk about The Patient. Alan Strauss, Steve Carell, is, from what we can tell, a relatively new widower as well as a therapist who sees patients in his large, mostly empty home. One of his new patients is named Jean, Donald Gleason, who comes to talk to Alan about how childhood physical abuse by his father has affected him later in life. After several months, Alan suggests they're not progressing in their work together because Jean is holding back. Jean agrees and imprisons Alan in his basement so that he can try to cure Jean, whose real name is Sam, of his compulsion to murder more people beyond the ones he has murdered already. The show was co-created by Joel Fields and Joe Weisberg, who are better known for co-creating The Americans. They are also credited with co-writing all 10 episodes of its first, possibly only, season. The first two episodes of this FX production have dropped on Hulu, where it will exclusively stream, even though officially we're not saying FX on Hulu anymore, apparently. And so we're only going to be talking about those two first episodes. Let's do the Chen check-in. Patty, should our listeners watch The Patient?
Yes, I dug it.
All right, Sarah.
Yes, great show.
Dave.
I dug it, but I'm not sure it's for the same reasons the creators wanted me to dig it. But nevertheless, ass in the seat, I'm going to say yes.
That's my first question. I'm going to say yes as well, especially after that second episode left us on a very intriguing cliffhanger. Mm-hmm. So let's get into it. When I first heard the premise and saw the trailer, my feeling was that this project was a pitch black deadpan comedy. I kind of still do now that I've watched it. I sort of feel like it's parodying the idea that underlies so much true crime that we have to understand the why of serial killers. But then I read Alan Sepinwall's review, which we'll link to. And he opens with a little story about telling his therapist about this show and his therapist saying, it sounds funny. And Alan saying, it's not. So normally I throw to our guest first, but I'm going to go to Sarah initially because she is a true crime buff. She spent more time than the rest of us reading and watching material about serial killers. What do you think about this show's tone and intention?
And do you read a lot because you're in training?
Don't answer that.
My high school classmates voted me either most likely to marry a serial killer and become David Letterman, or most likely to marry David Letterman and become a serial killer.
Right.
I actually think it was the second one, but I don't remember. Mm-hmm. If anyone in the class of 90 is listening to this, don't tell me. Don't correct me.
Very specific superlatives.
Yeah. I mean, it was all girls. We had nothing to do with think of this shit. So I did have a couple of notes on what you were just talking about, Tara, and the fact that it's sort of pointless to try to understand the why of serial killers, as actually Bill James once said, like, serial killers kill because they're serial killers. And like, we civilians, it's like pointless to analyze it or try to treat it. So I think the show understands that. But what I liked about the show is that the show is working the problem, for lack of a better term. Like, it has set itself this, like, well, what if this happened?
Right.
And then it's just stepping through without a bunch of tricksy stuff. Like, all the flashbacks feel sort of appropriately timed and paced. It's like, here is our premise, and we're just going to take it to its logical conclusion. It's very confident about its pacing. Steve Carell is great in it, I think. He also is, like, working the problem. I don't think I understand why Donald Gleason can't just be Irish sometimes, but
yeah.
What do I know about these things? It's nice to see, well, that's a spoiler, so I won't say it, but there's some casting coming up that I enjoyed. And if it is parodying or satirizing some idea about true crime, I think it's doing it with, like, a a deep understanding of that genre and of the fact that like serial killers can't be known to those of us who aren't them. And this is something that the serial killer tells you over and over again in the first two episodes. So I thought it, I mean, it's really interesting. It's way into this is really interesting.
Patty, what did you think about this, the show's tone and what it's trying to do?
One thing I liked, just kind of going out of order here, is that the killer is not some mastermind, but like, he has a normal amount of what a person who thought about what he's going to do to keep this guy trapped. But just like, you know, like, he's chained up. Okay, fine. He gives him plastic silverware. He's got a bedpan and you know, a chamber pot or whatever. You know, all that stuff, fine. You know, it's not clear whether he changed his clothes, what kind of bathing. It has, you know, we don't know how long. I don't really get a sense of how long it's been.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you know what Patrick's doing? He's discussing hostage strat, and I love it.
Toilet strat. Yep.
But it is just, you know, like, stuff like that, I think, is good. I also think that I really like that, like, the I know this sucks, like, is like a really kind of, I think it is trying to be funny in certain ways, like, because that's just like a very matter-of-fact way to say that. He's not like a scary, I mean, he's scary occasionally, but he's not, you know. And I also liked the, one thing I thought was really good was the, his articulation of kind of the urge, and then after the fact, it's not like this weird poetic, like Dexter monologue, it's just like,
right,
I have to do it, you know, or I really want to kill this guy, and then after, I'm like dead. And I want it to stop. You know, I want to stop.
Yeah.
I also had forgotten from when we said what we were doing, what we were going to do when we were going to record, to when I actually started watching last night, and it was like, oh shit, that's what this is. Oh, this is awesome. Like, the way it starts.
Yeah.
I was confused enough by Donald Gleason. I know he had that. He had the hat on.
Yeah.
But, so he's got like the emo hair, which I don't. I'm not a fan of. But they take away all. They sand off all of his like characteristics, because I think part of the reason why he's not Irish is that it would be easier to. He's not as anonymous if he's Irish, on a certain level, right?
Right.
So I guess that maybe that's part of it. They just took care of that problem, but they really wanted to cast him for one reason or another. But yeah, I really liked it. I thought the flashbacks were all. They all made sense. You know. You know. And I'm excited to see where it goes for sure.
I'll just add before I throw it to Dave that my your observation about he's not a mastermind, he's just a guy who has this compulsion. Similarly, Steve Carell's guy, Alan, who is a therapist, he's also not a mastermind. Like, he's not Dr. Lecter, who's immediately figuring this guy out. Like, when we see him in these first two episodes, he is really legitimately scared for his life and doesn't know how he's going to get out of it. And we only gradually start to see, like, okay, he may be forming some kind of a plan, but it's coming together slowly.
And it is processy in that regard, so I enjoyed that. But, I mean, I think the show understands that it's possible. Like, there's humor in any situation, no matter how bleak the situation or the humor, and they have really good tonal control and aren't like disrespectful about it. Like I said, they're just like, here's our premise. What would happen?
Right.
And I would love to look at their writer's room whiteboard. I just think that would be fascinating.
It's just
like all the things
they
rejected doing.
Dave, I already know a little bit about what you thought of that, but go ahead. What do you think about the show's plans, its intentions?
You know, I'm not a fan of the psychiatrist trope, talking on the couch thing in pop culture. I just don't like it, right? I'm not saying
it's
bad.
It's an easy shortcut sometimes.
Yeah, that is usually my problem with it. It's just like, how can we get character X to explain why he's all effed up or why he is the way it is? I know, let's put him on the couch. Mm-hmm. It's a very direct method to doing it. This show doesn't seem to be doing that. It is exploring a true crimey storyline. Like, if you told me that the guys that created The Americans created a show in which they created a universe in which the patient, the show we are watching, is the television adaptation of their in-universe The Patient, the podcast that existed
about the
first,
John Doe Killer.
And this is like Homecoming to Homecoming, except it's all incredibly fictional here in all universes. Like, I would have said, yeah, I get that, because it really felt like they were taking a interesting elevator pitch of a crime and turning it into a TV show, and all the weird little things that you don't usually see in Homecoming or even like True stuff, like making a murderer and stuff like that. Like, oh, and the serial killer's just kind of like a local fast food foodie. You know, he really knows the DoorDash and Grubhub A to Z in the back of his hand. Weird little touches like this like kind of set the universe to me, like seems phased enough from where we're living that I found it enjoyable in a slightly silly kind of way. Yet the main thrust of the story, Steve Carell's Alan has been moon knighted to a bed. What the hell's happening? We have, you know, the crazy general from Force Awakens, and now he's got a bad wig, and he's bringing, like, crazy dishes home where, you know, it's really good because some animal pooped it out, and now you get to eat it. Like, there are so many weird affectations going on here that it feels like they're having their cake and eating it too, which is, it is a compelling mystery. It is a compelling, true crimey story, yet it's also kind of ridiculous at the same way.
Yeah.
And it invites all the stuff that Patty's talking about. It's like, you know, because they get so into the weeds on these little character traits. Yeah. I do want to know what Sam's thought process was on leaving him alone. What were all the dominoes he had to have set up, or what are all the pieces he had to have set up to make sure this guy can function without having eyes on him and stuff like that? And all this criticism, Sarah's from True Crime, Patty's from just like, you know, weird little things here and there, me just like wondering what universe we're in, it all works equally, which is the amazing part of this show.
Absolutely.
And like the propaganda that you would usually have in a project like this has been replaced by some like Anthony Bourdain aganda, which I am absolutely here for.
Yeah.
I don't know how they did it. I don't care. I'm in. Love it. And Steve Carell in this role is like, strangely, like, because he's projecting this totally believable authority in this role, it's kind of sexy to me.
Yeah.
Even though he's, you know, with the Norm Corb glasses and the shawl collar sweater, like that should not work. I have problems, maybe.
Sure.
I'll talk to my own therapist about it. But yeah, it really is like a fascinating alchemy, like Dave was saying. Like, how does this work? Who cares? Let's just enjoy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Patty, I know you are an enjoyer of pop culture. Is this what you would ever guess the creators of The Americans would do as their follow-up project?
My fiance actually had me, we watched The Americans. She had seen it already. So we just, I'd never seen it. So we just finished it like, I don't know, 2 months ago, 3 months ago,
wow.
I want to say.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was great. You know, I, for whatever reason, didn't catch on with me. I don't know why. I think I was just not in the mood for all the different wigs and the, you know, like I just wasn't like, it was like, okay, so this, whatever, you know, and anyway, great show. I think the fact that it was a half hour, or really they're like 20 minutes, these episodes, like,
yeah.
I would have thought it has to be a comedy because you like can't do, at least, you know, the conventional, you know, understanding is you can't do like drama in 20 minute increments like this.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't work, you know, not prestige, not modern stuff like that, you know? So I thought that was really interesting. It also makes it so much more digestible, which I think is really great.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think that's like, I think it's a great trend. It's like when you see a really good movie that's like less than 2 hours, you know, it's just like such a, it's like, yes, see, they don't all have to be like, they don't have to be like this. Like, you know, again, I have no idea where it's going. Maybe something that's going to happen is going to drive me nuts. I have no idea. But, you know, the cliffhanger they set up at the end of episode two is very, it's like, okay, like the elements are so sparse that you add something and it's like, okay, now we see that we're going to shake up the bottle and see what happens here. You know what I mean? Like, what's this going to lead to?
And I watched three, and there's another one that's like 95% of other properties that would feel pretty cheap, but it, like they've earned it by that time. And my notes literally are like, holy shit.
Ooh, okay.
This is bonkaloo.
One thing I'm curious about is, and I might not be the only one because there's a couple beards in the chat here. is his beard going to get, I don't know how long it's supposed to be. He's supposed to be in there, have been in there, but like Steve Carell has a very full beard. He has, you know, he's Italian. Like, is the beard going to get bigger and bigger, or is he going to be, is there some phantom trimmer that he has that we don't see? Because he's not giving him scissors, you know? Like,
no,
so
certainly not.
Using a spork to
out. Or did he eat that? He ate that piece of the fork, right?
We're supposed to think he swallowed it.
Hasn't come out yet, though. Maybe episode three. That's what episode
Unforced, three is about. You're going to have a punctured intestine or something. Then you're in real trouble, buddy. That's, that's not a good way to.
I would say, in regards to the imagining what the heck the creators of The Americans were up to next, it does share sort of an alternate universe feel with The Americans, right? I mean, The Americans is set up that, you know, you have these Russians that were trained to be Americans and now they're living in America. And it's just sort of this weird, you know, in between worlds in our world kind of vibe. And there is sort of a phased reality to this, the patient too, that I feels familiar, you know, not in content, but in fuzziness that I feel like it shares with the Americans. So I wouldn't have guessed this, but now that it's here, I can see it.
I think a lot of it is that we don't see the outside world really at all. It's like very limited. And I think that I don't know if we're going to cut to some third storyline or something that's completely unrelated, you know, starting on one, you know, but
they're on the moon.
And yeah, there you go. For all I know, that'll be great or not, you know, but I kind of like that. It's like all we get are the what we see, what, and I can't think of his character's name, but we see what Steve Carell sees basically, you know, and that's really for the most part. That's it, you know?
Yeah, it's definitely a great COVID show for that reason. There's really two actors and they are very far apart all the time. In the second episode, we learn Sam is a restaurant health inspector. Does it take a psychopath to do that job? Patty, what do you think?
I think yes. I think that the you have to be very, very rule focused, right? So you're going around. And also there's, I think, I don't know about psychopath, maybe just like sadist or something where, you know, you get you know, you have somebody who's begging you because their margins are already, you know, 2% on their entire business and they, you know, took out all these loans. This should have been refrigerated and it wasn't, you know, so now you get dinged and now you get a B on the front instead of an A or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
I think there is a certain element of, and look, I mean, those jobs are important and they should happen, but the people that do them maybe are not people you would want to pal around with, we'll say.
I mean, I think that the lack of empathy that we associate with sociopathy is perhaps a perception of how inspectors in this line of work are also perceived.
Yeah. I mean, I think we've probably all had the experience where we, you know, get a meal from a favorite place. There's a hair in it and you're like, eh, all in a day, you know, you don't necessarily want to make a stink of it and, you know, get your favorite place shut down. Dave, anything to add?
Just that usually I would associate a restaurant inspector on the third tier, cop, didn't make it as a cop, didn't make it as a security guard or consultant, and now has to get his power trip via restaurant inspectors like the restaurant inspector from Bob's Burgers. Not the same vibe here.
Right.
But so usually I would expect a restaurant inspector to sort of be, you know, having a Napoleon complex, but... that's not really the case here.
Now you've got me thinking about just these inspections and stuff. And now I'm thinking of John Taffer being the killer. You know, you're making people sick. Shut it down. You know, but he's screaming at the guy.
Gordon Ramsay. Come on, guys.
We've already talked about Sam being a foodie. Do we have any particular reactions to the dishes that we see him bring? Because it's a real range. The first one, it seems like it's Sam's own Indian leftovers.
Yeah.
And then we also get the Thai thing that Sarah referred to with fermented fish entrails. And then there's just a very standard, like, diner scrambled eggs and toast, which it's possible Sam actually just made those himself. They look pretty stripped down. Any thoughts about the menu, Shea Basement, Patty? Any of these strike you as more appealing than the others?
I mean, you know, I get that he's trying to get... Well, the first one, it seems like maybe a little bit of an afterthought. I guess he didn't really plan out the food before he did the kidnapping and stuff. But you know, the second one, it's like, I get that he thinks this is like, you know, you got to try this. It's the best. It's like, you know, man, like, maybe you think of it that I'm not super into, you know, like... Yeah, starch and eggs. Also, like, I'm probably not going to eat the first few meals because I, like, don't think, you know, if you're going to poison me or something.
Right.
And I'm running on adrenaline.
And I have to poop in a bowl in the middle of this room and live with the consequences. Right. So,
yeah, that said, you know, if he brought home, like a pad ki mao or, like, a pad siu, I have pretty, you know, middle of the road. I don't stray too far off the main sort of boring American path for the, you know, for Thai food. I would have been into that, I think, you know, if I'm him. But also, I don't know, maybe you don't want to risk anything gastro. You don't want to have any issues, I feel like, in that situation.
So. Not with a chain on.
Yeah.
Although,
not.
This is one of the things I liked about Carell's performance, is that whenever the food comes in, like, you can see him sort of being, like, afraid and apprehensive about once again being in contact with this killer. But at the same time, curious and like eager to see what food it is. And then there's one scene where like he brings some Italian confection and he like takes a bite and he's like, I mean, like, there's like good food sort of overwhelms common sense, I guess, mm-hmm. in this situation. And I think that the weaving in of that is funny and like very authentic to what an actual person would be like in that situation.
Yeah.
Like, he's ordering dishes that are, you know, kind of adventurous in the grand scheme of the American palate, right? Yet he's also going to Dunkin' Donuts, which I think is actually a good character note, because mm-hmm. I always remember Sarah D. Bunting, you know, who has a refined palate. She's not super fancy, but she likes more than just burgers and fries. But I always remember her saying, well, actually, you go to Dunkin's because they just have the best fucking coffee around usually. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like that was a character note that they kind of borrowed from there, which is like, it is a merit-based coffee choice.
Yeah. It's not snobbery for its own sake.
Right. Yes. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. However, I will note he didn't ask about any dietary restrictions that Alan may have.
No, he didn't.
So that, like, I mean, if Sarah, if that was you, he would have problems if he was bringing you meat all the time.
Well, I just would not eat things with meat in them. So. Sure.
Well, and the Jewish stomach famously very strong and hardy and not doesn't lead to any issues for people. So that's, yeah, a secondary risk.
It's true. Yeah, Alan also called that out in his review, that it's a very, very Jewish show. There's a scene in the second episode where we meet some, in a flashback, some characters who are Orthodox, and there's some business with a plastic knife where I was like, okay, I see what they're doing there.
Mm, yeah.
We've already talked a little bit about them. Let's talk about Steve Carell just briefly. I think we can probably all agree we would rather see him doing this than more Space Force. Patty, your thoughts?
Have not seen Space Force.
You're fine.
Oh.
Well, yep.
I can't. That's one of those things I can't believe it actually happened, just because it was like, oh, that's like a funny gag. Oh, okay. We're all right. Yep. Okay. And then there were two seasons, right?
So there were. Yeah. And it's worse than you can imagine. Trust me. Yeah. I watched four.
He's able to layer just enough humor in places mm-hmm. and in his reaction. And it's not, you know, mugging or going over the top, you know, obviously.
Yeah.
But I also thought he was very convincing when he was like the first time he like was. When they had their first session, he's like, can barely talk. He's like so scared, like trying to be serious about mm-hmm. like, you know, like, we can't have fear hanging over this session. It's like, I don't know what to do about that in this situation.
Yeah. You know, that was a good line.
Sarah, you already know your feelings about his character, but anything else?
Yeah. I mean, and you know, he has this one line, I think in episode two, that he's like, or maybe it's later, that he says, sometimes when we wait, people don't say what we think they are going to. And, it's like such an obvious thing, but like the ways in which he is a therapist, but he and the writing don't fall back on that stuff that Dave doesn't like, because it's just like overused and like by numbers, like mm-hmm. sort of modular almost. And people don't even bother sort of actually thinking about what the characters are doing in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a delivery, like an information delivery system. Mm-hmm. I was expecting to not like this show, or mm-hmm. to just sort of tolerate it and be like, there are a few things here to admire, but I really liked it, including the set design, like that little cloud lamp next to the bed that basically is like a physical thought bubble over him in so many scenes. I just think it's really thoughtful and well done.
Yeah. We've already talked about Donald Gleason, Irish person doing an American accent. This is one of my like peeves, and I've talked about this before. He's not, I would say, Benedict Cumberbatch as Doctor Strange bad, but you know, I feel like he could do better. I don't necessarily know why, you know, I know why he's not doing an Irish accent as an Irish actor, but would it have been better if they had just cast an American actor, or was I the only one bugged by the accent?
Or set it in Boston, since it's given beat him halfway.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, maybe it's just because I live in a neighborhood that is like so Irish that it's like, just make him Irish, who cares? But
right.
Yeah. I mean, I always enjoy him. His accent work is not as bad as some, mm-hmm. like you said, but
yeah.
I mean, I'm not sure that his skills are so unique that you couldn't have found an American to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't really fixate on that so much. You know, obviously I know he's Irish. I know he's doing an accent. It wasn't glaring. You know, it would have to be really bad for me to be like, okay, why is this guy doing? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You know, like when a Canadian person says like sorry or something, and you're like,
that would
always get me with like Jim Carrey or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Where,
and it's like, it doesn't matter. It's not like, you know, like he can be Canadian also, you know, whatever. But
sure.
You're not wrong, but it hurts.
In a future episode, he brings home tackles.
Okay.
you know, I do think they had to anonymize him a lot, which maybe they could have just cast somebody who's kind of more generic, you know what I mean? Because it is a little strange. He's got that hair and that, you know.
Well, he's got the hair, and he's got like a few things we've seen, like the foodie thing. But I think like maybe it's going to change as the episode or as the series progresses. But right now, he's a cipher, right, in his first couple episodes. Yeah. And his choices are very down the middle, not quite monotone, but, you know, on that side of things. And I think those might be choices. And I think as his threat level starts to ramp up, that we'll see more of the actor bubble up and more acting
right
coming through. So I would guess that once we look at this season in retrospect, that we'll see that progression. Because right now, anybody can do what he's doing in the first couple episodes. Mm-hmm. And they wouldn't have to do it in that wig, although maybe that plays into it. Little pet theory.
We'll
he comes back down in episode 3. It's just him with a different wig. It's just him coming in, different wigs. Every time he comes in, different wig, different character.
That would be smart. I mean, the less he could bring to a cop if he escapes about what this guy looks like, the better, I guess, right? On some level. I have to say, you said threat level, so I just wanted to say threat level midnight.
Thank you. I was going to do that.
Thank you. And I just want to say,
let the wide stick give you the edge. Speed Stick Super Dry Antiperspirant.
The patient.
Yeah.
It is time to go around the dial. Our first stop is Tara. What have you been watching on TV recently?
Just a few notes about Star Trek Lower Decks. We talked about it its previous two seasons. It's back for its third season on Paramount Plus. This is the animated series about the ensigns of a ship in Starfleet. They're mostly lower stake adventures. And it started a little blah in its first season, got funnier over that season. It's still pretty consistently funny, although I will say we've watched the first 8 screeners. An episode in the back half of the season brings back an annoying character from an earlier season and makes an even more annoying story around her. That aside, we have the payoff of the season 2 finale cliffhanger in the season premiere. We get deeper looks at Rutherford and Tendi, the Eugene Cordero and Noelle Wells voiced characters. A very good guest voice appearance by Adam Pally. And a crossover with Deep Space Nine that will probably really delight people who watched that show, which I found fine. No beef with it. I just didn't have a lot of context for it. We'll see how they wrap things up in the last 2 episodes of the season that we still haven't seen. But overall, very charming, low-key show. Really worth your time most of the time. Dave, anything to add?
Between Lower Decks and Strange New Worlds, I think Star Trek is having a nice little comeback. Mm-hmm. The episode that you're talking about, that is Stinky Poo Poo.
Yes.
I
think it was episode 7.
I think you're right.
It's the technical term. Mm-hmm.
The level of annoying is like exactly at the level of the Great Gazoo from the Flintstones.
Mm-hmm.
And it's surprising that they put that episode out because it was stem to stern stink. So look forward to that one.
Stem to stern stink.
Yep. Also the name of my loomy competitor.
Oh,
put it in
no,
all your slats and cracks. Just like loomy, stem to stern stink from Colco.
Well, off that, I guess I'll go into my plugs. I have them more than the usual number because we're doing a pre-tape episode next week and there will be no plugs. So here we go. I wrote about A League of Their Own at Defector. Sort of turned into a little bit of review and a little bit of, like, why does everything have to be IP that we've heard of before? And then I also basically bullied Chris and Joe into having me on This Had Oscar Buzz this week to talk about A Walk on the Moon, the Diane Lane getting down with Viggo Mortensen at Woodstock movie.
Good.
It's really good.
It's and so good. They're so hot.
The panel that I moderated at the ATX Festival this year, Dangerous Women, they put it out on their podcast, which is called The TV Campfire. And so we will link to all of those things in the show notes.
All right, Patty, what have you been watching recently?
I have a couple here. I have one that just ended recently, and I have one that I'm now watching. The one that just ended is season 3 of For All Mankind on Apple TV Plus. It is a very good show. It has a very loathsome couple of subplots this season that were double, triple, quadrupled down upon. And I've read interviews with the creators who were just like, yeah, well, that's the story you want to tell, so whatever. And
deal with it.
Fair enough, I guess. But sure, are two characters and then this, you know, the sort of ancillary things around them that and they're related to each other that are just, you know, it seems designed like it's like I want to turn off the TV. There's a wrestling term called X-Pac heat, which is that what it's like, you know, it's not that you hate, it's not that you hate the guy because he's good at being a bad guy. You hate him because you want him to go away and like not be there anymore. And that's what both these guys have. And
what's that term called?
X-Pac heat. X-Pac was a wrestler. In WWE.
That's a very useful term.
It's a really good show. It's you know, it's What If Russia Landed on the Moon First is the way that it starts. And it goes through the decades. Very curious to see where it goes next, because they're having these actors who are in their like 40s. They're already in their late 60s in the show.
Yeah. Someone on our Discord for our Patreon said like that, what's her name? Chantel Van Santen, who plays Karen, gave an interview where she talked about like, it takes hours to do the makeup to make me look old. Like, where? You have a wig on that's kind of gray. That's it.
You know those fancy showers, you know, with the 10,000 nozzles? And remember, Tara, we were saying they should do that with suntan lotion for when you go to like a hotel in Hawaii or something like that, where you just walk into it, psh, you're done in 2 seconds.
Yeah.
I feel like the makeup for All Mankind was that, but with flour. Uh-huh. You know, just walked into the shower, they got poofed with flour, and then they walk out, and like no crow's eyes, you know, no liver spots.
Yeah.
They're just like got slightly whiter hair, and that's going to age about 15 years.
Is supposed to be in his late 60s, and he has lost zero muscle tone in all of the decades.
And he's the head guy on every mission. He's the first choice without question. We're sending this guy to Mars. We're going. Whatever. I love it. I don't even, you know, I just completely look past it at this point.
You do have to give yourself up to it at a certain point.
At some point, they're going to have to die, though. They can't. So, like, I don't know how far ahead the next jump is going to be. But actually, they did show it at the end. Never mind. So, they are plausibly still around at that point. Anyhow, so that's the one that just ended. But I will definitely be tuning in. I'm looking forward to season four. The one I'm now watching is Industry on HBO. Now, in I think it's like 3 or 4 episodes into the second season. Mm-hmm. It's basically like sexy iBankers, whatever. I don't know exactly what the term is, but they're people who work at a fake Wall Street bank, but they're in London. It's a very, it's a fun show. I don't know how else to put it. It captures like a, it makes me feel younger for some reason. I don't know why. It's hard to articulate why. But
back to your days, banking, having sex.
That's right. That's what that's what I used to be like for me. Every character on TV seems like they're older than me. It's kind of like how I think every athlete is older than me, even though I'm now at the age when athletes are all pretty much retiring. So I don't know. It's good. It's fun.
Well, here's
it's,
the thing about aging is that like there is an age in your head that you never progress upon, even though your body keeps on going. Like every time I think about how old I am, I'm like, yeah, I'm 34 or 35, right? And then like there's a pause and then like there's a little whisper in the back of your head. Dave, you just turned 50 this year. Fuck. But in my mind, everybody who is older than or like between 35 and 50 is like the same age as me. Like I'm the same age as them.
Right.
Yes. And your brain won't let you out of that trap. Like I don't know, maybe on your deathbed you're like, oh shit, yeah, okay, I'm old. I gotta get out of here.
Everyone's the little alien inside. It's like everyone's just meet Dave. That's what everyone's life is. Murphy movie.
But I've had that the other way, too, where I read an interview with Mary Steenburgen, and I was like, oh, we're around the same age. She's like 67, which I'm not. But anyway, Industry is a show. Dave and I watched the pilot, and we're like, eh, should we try it again? Because it seems like the second season has gotten a lot more shine than the first season did.
There's a lot of first of all, there's Ken Leung, like, is like one of the main guys, and he's terrific. There are a lot of these super icy guys on the other end of the phone, these British, like, rich guys who are the guys they have to kind of, like, impress and stuff. It's just, it's a lot of that, which I find very appealing. Now that we're through kind of like the girl has to prove herself in this environment, you know, thing, and in the second season, it's a little bit better because you're not kind of loaded up with that, although that was executed fine as far as I'm concerned.
Okay.
But everyone is like super out of control this season. Like they're just not in control of anything that's going on within boundaries. They're going to work and stuff, but it's just kind of like you know, you're all insane, you know. And that's, you know, that's entertaining to watch. So anyway. Yeah.
And for your plugs.
Podcast called What a Time to Be Alive. That is the show that counts down the things each week to make you say the thing that's the title of the podcast. It's just like the least topical news show, basically.
what are the most recent, a couple of the most recent topics, just to like ground it?
The guy who won the consecutive lying down competition in Montenegro, 60 hours.
Wait, uh-huh. He just had to lie down and not get up?
Yeah, you just had to lie down, yeah.
Was there any other rules, like no peeing, no pooping?
No, you could go to the bathroom. They changed those rules, which is kind of weak, so I don't really know.
See, this is the information that we need as a culture.
But yeah, so that was number one. I'm trying to think of what else we had. The problem is I forget everything the second
I'm telling you right now, based on just that one item, I would be a really good guest on your show. I love talking about all those little rules.
I'll also add, the turtle that screams like a man is one that that's a video I became aware of because of your podcast and have shown to Dave with delight. So that's a very important story.
We believe that he's real. It's real. It's still real to me. Damn it. That's how I feel about the turtle across like man. But yeah, so that's everywhere you get podcasts. That's myself, Eli Uden, Kat Barbador, a couple of comedians. I have another podcast with another friend, Nicole Conlon, called Not You Guillermo. It's now like a very sporadic. We did every episode last season of What We Do in the Shadows. It's like a recap show. Now we're doing kind of like two a season because we're not on a network anymore and someone else is not helping us produce it. So that's where that's at. And I'm Patty Moe on all the social stuff. So not TikTok because I don't like how I look and don't like to do videos. So.
Sarah, what do you got?
Oh, speaking of not liking how things look, that's how Mike Tyson feels about Mike, the 8-part docudrama based on his life, sort of, from the iTanya team. It dropped its first two episodes on Hulu last week. Mike Tyson has been dropping his furious objections to this project for like a year and a half. Still no lawsuit, which suggests to me that it was attempted and his lawyers were like, actually, technically, they're correct. Like iTanya, it's very watchable, but like the more you think about it tonally, the less great you feel about watching it and enjoying any part of it.
Yeah, they did Pam and Tommy, and I felt the same about that one too.
Like at TCA last week, apparently one of the executive producers was like, well, you know, we couldn't talk to Mike Tyson about his story, quote, because his life rights were already taken. So that was never on the table, which just strikes me as such a, I'm sorry you felt that way, way to approach it. And like, it's probably true, but it's also pretty fucking convenient to cite that as your narrative strat when the just one person in the title thinks that you're bullshit. In any event, Tyson is incensed that Mike even exists, has called Hulu a slave master for airing it, and I think we can assume that he is unlikely to, at Rogers' suggestion, watch it or change his opinion. But the question before us here today is whether you should watch it, and I am not sure what to tell you. Like I said, it's very watchable, and the three actors playing Tyson at various ages, including Ethan Barrett as 10-year-old Mike, BJ Minor as teen Mike, and Trevante Rhodes doing literally the heavy lifting as adult Mike. They do seem to find ways to dig into Tyson's native charisma without just doing an imitation, which they do rely pretty heavily on his distinctive speaking style, but they're also very charismatic actors. BJ Minor has exactly this on their IMDb page, and it's like, okay, like your eye just goes right to BJ Minor, and I'm very excited to see what's coming up in their career. But my issue is the tone. Like, it just plays gory, brutal, slow-mo knockouts for laughs. The score, the soundtrack is very self-conscious. I understand there's only so many ways to frame the story if you don't want it to be like a homeworky dirge, but I also think there's 50 ways to imply that a pigeon got decapitated instead of showing it.
Ooh.
Dark humor is fine, but not everyone gets to deploy it about every topic, and that their choices are probably the best ones on offer for this project don't mean they're good. Exactly. Tyson as a narrative subject opens windows into so many other conversations. He should have his own Made in America, in my opinion. He doesn't yet. I hope that happens one day. I hope the Jamie Foxx version of this that Tyson did sign off on is better than this without being too like prayerfully respectful of the this living person's narrative wishes. It's going to drop two episodes every week. I'm going to stick around another week, I think, because of the compelling performances, but I may just give up because I just feel, it just feels oogie. And until Iron Mike Forged in America comes out, then maybe I should just be out also. My full review of this is on my True Crime Review newsletter that I write with Eve Beatty. It's called Best Evidence. You can find it at bestevidence.fyi. We review podcasts, books, docs. I talked about the end of Only Murders in the Building second season last week. Today, as we're recording this, I wrote about AJC Breakdown's ninth season, which gave me an excuse to use that Trump screaming at the lawn mowing kid picture, which I just love that. It brings me joy. Sure. Most of the content is free. I also talked about I Just Killed My Dad, which is a true crime documentary series at the Crime Scene SEEN podcast. That link will be in the show notes.
All right, coming up on the next Extra Extra Hot Great on episode 200, it's a 200D game time in which Tara has assembled a selection of $200 value questions straight from Jeopardy for me and Sarah to battle it out on with real world consequences, because the loser had to buy the winner $30 worth of something that you can get over 200 of.
I said 200 or more.
200 or more. And then on Extra Extra Hot Great 201 is Indiana Jones and the IMDb 250, in which we do the thing with the sand and the idol, where we swap something that is on the IMDb with something similar that should be on the IMDb top 250, and then we'll talk about why that is happening. Yep. We also talk about why that list is one of the worst things on the internet, because it is.
Yeah.
Both those episodes will be available to all supporters at any level. Just set your browser to patreon.com/extrahotgreat to join today. And then on the next EHG Primes, next week, it is TV Teacher Thunderdome. 27 TV teachers will enter the Thunderdome. They will die two at a time at the hands of one another until there is just one TV teacher standing.
Yep.
It was a barn burner. Don't miss that.
Yep.
Yeah.
2 weeks hence, we've got Showtime's American Gigolo TV extension of the movie from yesteryear with Richard Gere, with returning guest Sarah Baker. Don't miss that. It is time for the Extra Hot Great Canon, talking about a particular episode of television and whether or not it deserves to be in our Hall of Fame. Presenting this week is Tara. Take it away, Tara.
Hello. Regular Show is an animated TV series primarily about Mordecai and Rigby, the laziest blue jay and raccoon on Earth. They sort of work in a city park along with a super strong and also immortal yeti, a lollipop-headed simpleton, a ghost with a hand on the top of his head, and a gargoyle? Truly unclear what Muscle Man is supposed to be, but anyway. The manager of this team is a rageaholic gumball machine, obviously. For 8 seasons on the Cartoon Network, this crew got into a wide array of 11-minute adventures, but today I am presenting an episode with a comparatively narrow scope, Season 4, Episode 18, titled That's My Television. Here's why I think it should be inducted into our canon. Number one, its show within a show is painfully recognizable. Only our two leads, Mordecai and Rigby, appear in this episode, which finds them of their main cast. There are other characters, but those are the only two that we know. It finds them attending an event for fans of an 80s sitcom called That's My Television. Clip one.
First, some of your favorite RGB2 moments.
I hope you saved room for dessert.
RGB2, room for dessert doesn't actually mean a whole room full of dessert.
I want to watch football.
I want to watch dancing.
Hey, come on. It's my turn to drive.
My parents never let me do anything.
Well, I hope you saved room for dessert.
In our reality, the TV landscape of the 80s and honestly most of the 90s was rife with live-action sitcoms about aliens, witches, psychokinetics, and robot daughters. Thus, a fictional sitcom in which a family includes a catchphrase spouting anthropomorphized television is only barely a dumber concept than a lot of the shit we have all watched. Number two. This episode attacks heartless TV executives. Mordecai and Rigby have been drawn to the fan event on the promise that RGB2, the star of That's My Television, will be raffling off his autograph for the very first time ever. Mordecai or Rigby win. They basically share everything. Doesn't matter which one of them actually had the number called. But instead of signing his name on the DVD box set, our heroes win. RGB2 writes, "Meet me in the bathroom." There, he tells them the whole sordid story of his career. Clip two.
I'm being held prisoner.
By who?
The studio executives. It all started when the show became a hit. The studio kept me around for personal appearances, studio tour sightings, guest spots, the works. When the series revival was announced, I had enough and turned it down, but the execs refused to let me out of my contract. I'm forced to be a prisoner of the studio for the rest of my days.
That's so messed up. You don't have any idea how many times I've had a bad day and the only thing that would make me feel better was watching your show.
Yeah, or how many times your show was a perfect excuse not to do my homework.
Mr. RGB2, is there anything we can do to help?
Thanks, guys. You know, I always told myself that if I ever got out of here, there's one place I'd like to go.
Where's that?
To see the Pine Mountains.
Dude, we're gonna bust you out of here.
Yeah. And you're gonna see those mountains.
So, Rigby and Mordecai sneak away from the studio's security goons, steal a van, and eventually drive up a ramp to jump the studio wall with RGB2 in tow. The lead studio executive, who bears a probably not coincidental resemblance to Cartoon Network founder Ted Turner, refuses to give up the chase. Clip three.
All right, listen up, everyone. I want RGB2 taken alive.
Taken alive, sir, but why?
Because he's a television icon. He doesn't deserve freedom. He deserves to make me money.
Watching it again a couple of weeks after the new head of Warner Brothers Discovery disappeared several of HBO Max's animated titles, including Close Enough, creator J.G. Quintel's follow-up to Regular Show, this episode hits different than when I watched it the first time. I appreciate that Quintel is teaching the youth and his audience to distrust and disdain money-grubbing showbiz suits. They need to know. Number three, it does not soft soap its carnage. The chase eventually gets to a highway, and I'm not going to go through it beat by beat, but RGB2 has a rocket launcher? Clip four.
Whoa, where'd you get that?
It was a gift from the Russian Prime Minister. He loves the show. I hope you saved room for dessert. Whoa!
So, it's not like we see disarticulated body parts after this talking television blows a helicopter out of the sky, but we don't see a pilot parachuting to safety like in G.I. Joe either. This show is not aimed at little kids, but it's not an Adult Swim show either. It definitely aired new episodes in primetime. So as a childless sicko with a teenage boy's appetite for violence, these instances of straight-up murder, however off-screen the corpses may be, always tickle me. Number four, it does not spare toxic fans. Just when it seems as though Mordecai and Rigby are going to evade the studio goons, they find the bridge they're on blocked by a phalanx of irate That's My Television fans. Clip five.
What are you doing? We're trying to help him.
We don't care what you're trying to do. We just want the autograph box set. You're gonna pay for this.
The squad of morons doesn't care about the people or entities that make the show they've built their identities around loving. They just want to acquire stuff. DVD box sets were already losing their currency by the time this episode aired, but I guess having RGB2 write his plea for help on a Funko Pop might have been too on the nose. At this point, we also find out how the bad executives and the worst of the bad fans have joined forces to persecute RGB2. Clip six.
Bravo, gentlemen. Bravo. Overall, that was a pretty nice PG getaway. Way to reach out to the 18 to 35 demographic. Oh, and a nice third act climax, by the way. The helicopter explosion really tied it all in with a cherry on top.
Why is he talking like that?
That's what they say before they deliver the death blow.
We just have a couple of notes for you. You see, our research groups have shown that nobody wants to see the good guys win anymore. And unfortunately for you, we spend millions trying to find out how to prevent this type of situation. Let's just say we found an effective solution. Our focus group studied everything that boys ages 9 to 14 find the most brutal and destructive.
So you can hear him. This ultimate bad guy has a German army helmet with a spike on top, bullhorns on the sides, a cape, no shirt, camouflage knickers, an automatic weapon in each hand, also somehow twirling nunchucks. cowboy boots with spurs, a sword and skateboard strapped to his back, although he does use the latter to very slowly roll toward his opponents.
Quick correction for you. The actual swords are sword-length bayonets on the Uzis he has.
Okay, thank you, Dave. In about 25 seconds of screen time, the mania for TV anti-heroes, this episode aired in 2013, a very fertile period for that trope, and the idiocy of focus groups are both efficiently eviscerated. This is what sharp writers and skillful animation artists can do. And just when it seems as though all hope is lost, Mordecai and Rigby have surrendered, and RGB2 is on his way back to studio custody. Rigby spots a trash barge approaching the bridge, giving him an idea. He tosses the autograph box set at the bad guy so that the fans swarm him. Then our heroes drive off the side of the bridge, bounce off the barge, and head to Pine Mountains, bringing us to number 5. Somehow, this is simultaneously one of the show's weirdest episodes and its most normal episode. Rigby and Mordecai drive RGB2 to the address of it's on his treasured Pine Mountains postcard, only to find out the gum stuck to a corner concealed the fact that it was promoting Pine Mountain's gas station. Mordecai and Rigby are crestfallen not to have made RGB2's dream come true, but he is perfectly satisfied. They all climb up the billboard to watch the sunset, and RGB2 says he wants to see it with his own eyes, which is when they pull off the screen in front of RGB2, and we find out he is actually not a television, but a pale, naked man folded into a TV-sized box, gripping a microphone. Clip 7.
Whoa. What, did you actually think I was a TV?
This is a show with a very elastic reality. The characters have hung out with death and babysat his child, time-traveled multiple times, and faced trial in galactic court for being too cool. The episode before That's My Television involves Mordecai and Rigby trying to teach a literal caveman how to fit into contemporary society. So yes, this whole time I thought RGB2 was a sentient TV, and the reveal that he isn't is an actual shock. Having Mordecai gently close the performer's eyes and be told he was just resting, not dead, is the perfect tag to close the episode. That's My Television takes viewers on a journey of chills, thrills, spills, and kills, then leaves us on a surprisingly tender moment, which you really can't think about too long, or you start wondering, who's going to look after this guy now? He doesn't have closer ID. I am not sure he's able to move any of his atrophied limbs, and it's been established that he needs to breathe canned air from the 80s to live. But subverting expectations is what regular show does best, and this is a prime example. I hope you will agree and induct it into the canon.
Thank you, Tara. All right, guest Patty, would you like to start us off? What did you think of this episode and Tara's argument for it?
I'm a regular show partisan for sure. I love the way the show escalates. It's like one of my favorite things about the show. I mean, the pilot is like starts with they play a keyboard and it creates this whole insane thing. You know, it's always been a show about this kind of stuff. And this is one of the variety where they're trying to help somebody, which they don't always do. A lot of the time they just get in trouble and it's getting out of trouble before they, you know, cause they made a mess and they have to, clean up the park or whatever. So this shows you what Mordecai and Rigby are all about. You know, they didn't screw up too much. They pretty much were completely competent this episode, which is surprising. There was no, you know, Rigby blowing something or, you know, whatever usually happens, for seemingly no reason. I would put it in. I love this show. I miss it. You know, anything that JG puts out, I will be there. So whatever's next.
Sarah, what do you think?
It's air from the 80s. If I don't breathe it, I'll die. Relatable. Also relatable for our sister Patreon podcast, Again with This, we watched an episode of Small Wonder. I will never stop apologizing for doing that to Dara. But the fact is, this is what we thought was like normal TV.
Yeah,
I think we dimly understood that it was bad, but we felt that it was our fate. And I was very impressed that in such a short amount of time, they got in so many tropes and they didn't really have to underline or asterisk anything. But I kept having to pause it and sort of go back to like get stuff that I missed. The joke and like message density is extremely high, which was impressive. Like even the soundtrack that you heard in the clips, very 80s, that when the, you know, evil executive is giving notes, these are definitely 80s notes that you would hear about like an action show, like, you know, that a tank flips over 48 times on the A-team and the Parents Television Council is like, eek, and it's like, but no, that everybody climbs out with cosmetic smudges and goes off with the police. Abe Lincoln's plaintiff, I'm okay, that also was like annoyed and sarcastic at the same time. I replayed it like 15 times. So good. And then the number of targets that they managed to hit, again, in a very short amount of time. And that's what I love about these like 12 to 14 minute shows sometimes, that it's like they understand that that's the length of time that this story needs to be. It's exactly as surreal and bizarre as it needs to be. And then they're on to the next weird thing. So this was very enjoyable, very dense. Again, I have no notes for the presentation. It was excellent. And I'm not dead. I was just resting. It's definitely going into regular rotation at our house because, I, you know, it's been a long summer. I'll just leave it at that. Dave, take us home.
Yeah, the ending of this episode is one of the great, you know, what the hell moments of regular show. You just didn't expect it because you've seen this character now and then in the series before, and a TV that is a TV that lives makes perfect sense in universe, but here's the exception. It's actually this guy who lives in a TV and has never actually left the TV, I guess, has to breathe 80s air. It reminded me of the joke, Clink Clank, You're Dead from The Simpsons, where they go visit, they're going to the sci-fi convention, and there's a Robbie the Robot type of thing. And they're like, oh, I wonder what happened to the, you know, the little person that had to operate that from the inside. And they walk away, and then the door slowly slides open. There's a tiny little skeleton inside. Like, it is the same joke, but
yeah,
it hits a little different on the regular show just because of their previous experience with the character. That said, I feel like a lot of things that Sarah is relating to, you know, just the density of things and sort of how stupid it gets. Like, there are definitely dumber episodes than this, and there are ones that have a much more elastic reality and, like, just whatever beyond elastic is, you know, like, there's a star chamber of star babies. They're friends with, like, this Space David Bowie guy.
Yeah.
And they all know death, and just, like, the fate of the universe is always in peril in every other episode of this show. So, like, this is actually the main story, besides the fact that the TV is actually human, is actually really grounded for the regular show. And I don't mean it as a knock. I'm just saying, like, the elements that you kind of glommed onto here as enjoyable, I would invite you to keep watching because they become dumber and dumber. The floating head of the video game record holder, who is a lot like the Fistful to Quarters guy from the documentary, just gets insaner and insaner. There's a lot of episodes like that. There's probably a couple in the canon already.
We don't have any episodes in the canon yet.
Really?
No.
Okay. So I will say that this episode, I understand what they're doing. I didn't think it was that funny until the end. There are some jokes here and there, but I think there's a lot more funnier episodes of this show. Like, the 80s era is a good bit. The TV is obviously a really good bit. And I enjoyed the absurdity of the TV character recruits these two to help him escape this lifelong prison he's in. But I will say, I just didn't think it was that funny until the end. So I'm probably going to say no to this, but I've got a feeling it might not matter. So let's get the official vote, see the other two in. Patty, this episode, canon worthy, yay or nay?
Yay.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Pretty nice PG getaway there, Tara. It's a yay for me.
All right, that means... That, the regular show, season 4, episode 18, That's My Television. You are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It's time to discuss the winner and the loser of the week. I have this week's winner, and it is Dad's Getting Hit in the Nuts. Good news for all those dads getting hit in the nuts. America's Funniest Home Videos has doubled their prize money for first place. I guess that's going to mean a lot better nut crushing in the future. Mm-hmm. They also brought back their live audience. I guess that's great. It's weird that this show still exists in this day and age. I would imagine the cutoff and age... You know, we got nobody up until like 62, and then like the 62 and ups fucking love this show because it's the only place they know how to get dads getting kicked in nuts content.
Yeah.
Even though there's 1,000 million times more of it on the internet for you to consume.
People that can't find fail compilations.
Exactly.
Yeah. Who hosts it now?
Alfonso Ribeiro.
Yeah, okay. That's what I sort of thought. Okay. Yeah.
That feels right. Mm-hmm. All right. Loser of the week, Sarah?
NBC for a bunch of reasons. First of all, they're pondering abandoning the third hour of primetime. Perhaps they would like to pick up a phone and call Jay Leno's garage and see how that went last time. Also, the premiere tryout of Peacock's The Resort on NBC put the network last for the night. And over at Law & Order Sport Utility Vehicle, the show apparently forced Kelly Giddish out after the upcoming season. This is the second season in a row that a lady detective has, like, that role has been no longer necessary.
Yeah, and it wasn't the show. It was the network. Like, apparently the showrunners were like, this was not our choice either.
Yeah, and I'm not sure why they changed the showrunner, because last season actually wasn't for SVU in this long-toothed era that bad. But at least Ice-T is staying put. Thank goodness. When he's not hosting true crime shows and being on commercials for Car Shield.
Speaking of staying put, are you going to stay put to find out what time it is?
Is it game time?
Yeah, is it good time?
Yeah, it's not. Woo! Dave had an MRI today, so we're having a non-regulation game time that I wrote.
Can I just say, just before we absolutely know what's going on,
yes,
that there is a very good chance that I've been walking around on a fractured hip for the last 3 to 4 years. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Goodbye.
Yeah. Well, before your leg falls off, can you play a game?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, great. Today's game is Tube Tunes 11.
Oh, my God.
Because...
How have we not run out yet?
We've done it because people keep making shows.
Keep making them.
And I keep quietly making notes in my phone for future Tube Tunes. All right. Warning for before we start to people who listen to the show with their kids. One of these songs has bad words. So Dave is going to play a clip of an original song from a TV show. And since we have a guest who is new, I have less ability to predict what shows he might be familiar with. For the first time ever... since we did this with listeners earlier this year, there are going to be hints.
Ooh. Oh.
So if you don't know if you don't know the show after the clip, I will tell you the name of one star of the show or a guest star if I reasonably believe that will make it more gettable. It's 2 points if you get it just off the clip. After the hint, it's worth 1 point. You can guess at each level. Why not? It's non-regulation game time. So for that reason also, we're doing no steel meals, no gross worth equalizer challenge zones. No show is in here more than once. Standard stakes apply. If Sarah or Patty wins, they get 3 steel meals. If Dave wins, he gets the right to make me create another one of these.
How bewildering is all this crazy terminology we're throwing out right now, Patty? You don't have to worry about any of it.
You get
of it
a wicked Wango
week.
Card.
He's just, not dead. He was only rusted.
I'm reeling at the lore here. Yeah.
This is... All right.
This is a go-to game that I have made many times, as you've heard. 10 previous times. This is the 11th. So let's throw it to Picky to see who's going first.
We will start with Sarah.
All right, so our order is Sarah, then Dave, then Patty. Are you all ready to play Tube Tunes 11?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Clip number one is for Sarah D. Bunting.
I'm the baby merchant. Tots are us. I give you all the service and no damn fuss. Give the baby merchant just a week or two. I'll have your baby for you. Ooh, yeah.
Please stop.
That's to leave in the woo-woo.
Oh, God. That is Cop Rock.
That is Cop Rock.
What was the name? Baby Merchant?
Baby Merchant.
Baby Merchant.
Yeah.
Okay. There was also some, like, elementary parkour on park benches while he's singing to prospective
clients. What year
clients.
Did Cop Rock come out? 1990.
91, excuse me.
Is that the year after Law & Order came out?
Yes.
So, because there's some Law & Order guitar work in there. Okay.
It's true.
Interesting. Mm-hmm.
All right, clip number two is for Dave.
Cause he's America's son, a shining beacon of freedom. He's America's son.
Next.
That is from, okay, let me see if I can place this right. I know it's from The Boys.
That's correct for 2 points.
Is that the theme park, the superhero theme park?
Yes.
And that's the Crimson Countess?
Yes.
This is like really sad show she puts on every hour?
Yes. Yeah, it's okay. About Soldier Boy. He is the titular America's son. Well done.
Thank you.
Clip number 3 is for Patty.
Mothers and fathers and jugglers and judge hells. Now we are joined in a cobweb of rainbows.
Okay, that sounds like Jane Krakowski. I'm going 30 Rock with that one. I did it.
That is 30 Rock, but
it's not Jane Krakowski.
It's not Jane Krakowski.
It's not?
It's the pregnant teen girl that Liz is trying to get her baby.
Oh,
and Liz Lemon.
Yes, okay. And then Liz joins in to try to cement their bond. But it doesn't matter how you got
still
there.
It's a result.
You got there. That's right.
That was just neurons firing and making connections, getting you to the right place. Yeah.
That's right. All right. Clip number 4 is for Sarah D. Bunting.
Yeah, I'll be there for you, girl. Oh, yeah. I'm gonna be strong now.
You can count on me. Yeah.
I'll be there for you, girl. I'm gonna be strong now.
Before you answer, Sarah, I just want to remind Sarah and Dave, all of your questions are shows I know you watch. Mm-hmm. Proceed.
You know I watch. Oh, okay. Is that Girls 5 Eva? Because I know. Okay.
Do you want the hint?
Hint.
Your hint is Mariska Hargitay.
What? Wow.
Wait, hang on. Does every series absolutely have to have a musical episode? Question mark. And now let's hear the answer.
Well, I mean, I'm going to guess Law & Order SVU.
That's correct for 1 point. That was from a cold open. It's an episode about a hip-hop artist.
Yeah.
And the reason it's that is because I tried, Sarah, so hard to get the C-squared You Ain't My Lady, You My Bitch from the Moriarty episode of Law & Order, and it is not online, and I fucking looked. So that's why you
well,
got that.
Next time you play this... I know a guy.
All right. David T. Cole, clip 5 is for you.
Where have all the daddies gone? Where did they all go? My uncle is my daddy now, and soon there will be snow. Where did...
Jeez, that does not ring a bell.
Okay.
Choir... Orphans. It's not Futurama.
No.
All right, I'll take the hint.
The hint is Alan Tudyk.
Huh. Alan Tudyk. Okay, I'm just going to... Okay, so he's on... not answering.
Okay.
Talking out loud.
Yep.
He's on Resident Alien. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's from that. That sounds stupid enough. But I don't remember it from the first season of Doom Patrol. Yeah.
It is Resident Alien.
No!
It's the musical the kids split on about the 59.
Oh, yeah! Ah, damn. Okay, yeah. Well played.
Thank you. Clip number 6 is for Patty. Patty, I feel good about your chances with this one.
Okay.
What is it that you feel, love, that fear makes you conceal, love, the powers that you heal, love? Reveal. Take me in your arms.
Frage. We got it.
And you should know.
That was a real softball. I appreciate that.
I have already used up, I think, every single other Frasier original song. And then when that one came on, when I was watching it on Hallmark recently, I was like, oh, yeah, right in the phone. Okay, back to Sarah for clip 7.
Believe it.
Letting go.
I think she used to date the keyboard player.
Retracing the roads.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Keytar of Rage. Beverly Hills, 90210.
It is. David Arquette and his Keytar of Rage. And the crazy thing is, when you actually listen to the song, there's no keyboard on it at all.
No.
Clip 8 is for Dave.
R.I.P. Joey Tata. Just wanted to say.
Yes. Yeah. We miss him.
Here we go. Yeah, sure. Whatever. Means we're going to work together and turn Jasper into a household name. He wants to do for me what 50 did for the game. Minus their ensuing beef. That exchange could not have gone better. I can't believe he said, yeah, sure, whatever.
Yeah, I've heard that before. Can I just listen to it? Because there are some names there I didn't get. Or you can just tell me what the names were.
It was Jasper.
Jasper. Yeah, okay. I'll take the hint. It sounds like Neil Patrick Harris to me, but...
It is not.
Okay.
It's Ben Schwartz is your hint.
Oh, Ben Schwartz. Okay. Ben Schwartz has been in Parks and Rec. He's been in other stuff, probably. Parks and Rec?
Ah. Looked like Patty knew it. Patty, what is that one?
The After Party.
It's the After Party.
Oh yeah,
two. I don't know what.
Yeah, that is a annoyingly well put together song.
It really is. All of those songs, I was like, this is Adam Schlesinger is resting easy because these songs are all honoring his spirit.
Yeah.
All right, clip 9 is for Patty.
We like. Happiest fools in all of France. So put on your shoes, put on your pants, come sing along to
Who Are You?
Ambulance!
Oh, take me to hospital.
Did he say hospital or hospital?
Huh. It's familiar.
It's really recent.
It's not doing anything. I got to go hint. I'm in trouble here.
You'll get it from the hint.
Your hint is Mark McKinney.
Oh, okay, Kids in the Hall.
That's correct. It's from the new Kids in the Hall.
The new Kids in the Hall. Okay, so yeah, I'm admittedly delinquent on that. So that's
okay. Fine. I took a gamble on that one.
No,
okay.
That's
first episode, good. Yeah. I think you're okay to skip.
Okay, back to Sarah for clip 10.
When it's time to change, then it's time to change. Don't fight the tide, come along for the ride, don't you see? When it's time to change, you've got to rearrange who you are and what you're gonna be. Sha-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na. Sha-na-na-na-na. Sha-na-na-na-na-na-na-na. Sha-na-na-na-na.
The Bunch has some bangers. That's the Brady Bunch.
It is a good song.
Yeah, it's not bad.
I'm not embarrassed. And other than, I know it's hack to say that, like, the two oldest kids were eye-fucking each other, but they really are in that clip, and it's not super. It's not subtle.
It's not, no.
All right, clip 11 is for Dave.
All right, I need it. I gotta get it.
Much more than just changing some diapers. Gotta set a good example. Gotta feed them lots of food and even some knowledge. Close your. A baby's in this world now and she's melting my heart. Close your. A baby is born. Thank you, Yahweh. Fart.
Oh, no. Oh, those voices are so familiar.
Just one voice.
Crap. I can need the hint.
The hint is Will Forte.
Oh. Okay. Is that Last Man on Earth?
Yes! Oh. Nice. It is Last Man on Earth.
My brain was going, what's his Ken Marino from?
It did sound a little Marino-y. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Clip 12 is for Patty.
Friday night, I'm thinking that we just might run away to some place we can be who we are. We can be who we are.
I love you, Mom.
Three Stacks on the Radio. That is, I Think You Should Leave.
It is.
Seminal.
I realize I forgot to put in score breaks. So let me do that now. What are our scores, please, Sarah D. Bunting?
Fairly close game. David T. Cole has 3 points. Patty and I are tied with 7 points each.
Oops. Okay.
All right. Let's get into it. You guys each have 2 questions, or clips, if you will, left to hear. Sarah D. Bunting, clip 13 is for you.
Stopping my teardrop to the butter. Kisses like pop rocks and loving a man like me. To the butter.
Sarah looks so confused right now.
Oh my God. No, I just, it's like just out of reach. Uh-huh. I mean, SpongeBob? Mm. Hint?
Your hint is Steve Martin.
Oh, Jesus, I forgot that thing. Only Murders in the Building.
That's right. A show I do not watch, but when that came up in my feeds, I was like, make a note, and I did. Mm. Over to Dave with clip 14.
Moggy girl, my heart's in a whirl tonight. I need you, cat, oh, Moggy. I need you so, oh, Moggy cat. Before we met, nothing in my life was right.
Okay, you finished it.
But all that changed with Margie. You've blown me away. Oh, Carrie.
All right. I don't think I would have got that from the voices, but I'm guessing just based on the character named Carrie that this is King of Queens.
You're correct. Back to Patty for clip 15.
There is a fountain filled with blood drawn from Emmanuel's veins, and sinners plunge beneath that flood, lose all their guilty stains, lose all their guilty stains, lose all their guilty stains, and sinners plunge.
Another show that puts out consistently good music.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was a tricky one for that's Righteous Gemstones. That was Baby Billy.
Very good.
Yeah, it took me a minute. I was like, uh-oh, this is, I should know this, but I recognize the Gog.
The Gog. Sarah point for calling him the Gog.
It's true. It will not surprise you to learn Misbehavin' has already been in a previous edition of Two Turns.
Yeah, it was in like number 3.
It was like as soon as it was out, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
It. All right.
Why it exists.
You guys each have one more to go. What are our scores now?
David T. Cole now has 5. Oh. I have 8. Oh. Patty has 9. Oh. So who knows what will happen?
Okay.
I mean, we know what won't happen. Sorry, Dave, but a couple other things could happen.
Well, yeah. Let's play these last 3 clips anyway. Clip 16 is for Sarah D. Bunting, but in a way, it's for all of us.
Uh-oh.
Before you answer, I just want to say, if you don't get this right, we're stopping the podcast.
Oh, no!
Like, this episode and forever.
No.
I mean, it took me a minute.
Okay, phew.
Took me a minute. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And the visuals in our Zoom call were a little distracting, but I believe that this is G.I. Joseph. Please tell me I'm right.
Well, it's been a good run, everybody.
Okay, well.
Would you like your
it
hint?
Was.
You'll get it
yes,
off the
please.
Hint,
your hint is Jerry Orbach.
It's, what's it called? Buck Rogers.
There
yes,
there
it is.
God,
few.
Sorry.
When I was clipping that, I just realized I was just listening to that song because, again, that song is also really good.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with the episode Space Rockers, Patty?
I am not familiar, no.
In the TV show Buck Rogers in the 25th century, Jerry Orbach plays an evil music producer mm-hmm. that creates hypnotic music to turn the youth of the galaxy against
power structures.
Yeah.
And only Buck Rogers could save the universe.
Mm-hmm.
That is hypnotic music, so that makes sense.
Yeah.
That it's did sound like it could have been G.I. Joe anti-drug. Yeah.
That was cold.
Right?
That could have been on like disco Cold Slither.
That was Cold Slithery. That's where
it was.
I was going.
Kind of.
They were from the same era. I mean, this was
the same episode, basically. This is the same storyline.
Yeah,
it's true. All right. Clip 17 is for Dave.
Yeah, all right.
Hippocode, I've won my share. Tonight's the one night we play it fair. From Killer Croc to Firefly, throw those hands up in the sky. Put on a smile.
All right, very recent entry. Maybe the most recent. That is Like Joker Do from Harley Quinn.
Correct, for 2 points. Finally, the one I've been really holding back. Because it's going to bring us all the most joy, I think, second to Space Rockers.
Wow.
Clip 18 is for Patty.
All right.
Who will come first on the wedding night? The wedding night. The wedding night. Who will come first on the wedding night? I think Nan or Mike on the wedding night. Who will come first on the wedding night?
If his cock feels right and that pussy is tight.
There are those bad words, I promise.
All right, no, now look, I don't have any agency over other podcasts, but if Patty gets this one wrong, there is another podcast that is going to close down immediately. Okay, please.
That is true. Yeah, that's
really an eventful non-regulation game
time. There will not be a season wrap-up episode that we eventually get to. That is From What We Do in the Shadows. That
correct. Is wedding. Yeah. Let's get those final scores.
David T. Cole made it pretty close with 7 points. I finished with 9 points, but Patty is our winner with 11
Yay!
Points.
Oh, nicely done.
Congratulations.
Never win these things.
Valued guest.
Thank you for sending this podcast out on a high note.
I'm going to save that tiebreaker for a future tube tune.
Very good. Nicely done.
That was fun.
Hey.
All right, guys, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We sat on the couch for The Patient before going around the dial with stops at Star Trek Lower Decks, For All Mankind, Industry, and Mike. Tara got the regular shows That's My Television into the canon. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Patty was the winner of this week's Game Time from Tara. Next up, Jeopardy 200s on Extra Extra Hot Great, and on the next EHG Prime, TV Teacher Thunderdome. It's going to sound so much better when I put reverb in it in post. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariana,
where have all the daddies gone?
Sarah D. Bunting,
hope you saved room for dessert.
And Patty Monahan,
I know this sucks.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Great.
Well, we're out of time.
Isn't that my line?